Mayor, I don't have any more questions. Thank you very much.
Total Bank, do you have any questions?
Yes, just very quickly then. You substantiate the testimony of Mr. the Hartwells, Walters, and Van Shikes as far as the dirty tricks and activities that you saw come across the guarding office desk?
Yes.
And you substantiate that the guarding office tried to frame or plant criminal activities on people that they described in sworn testimony?
Yes.
And you also said that there was a lot of editing of tapes of undercover and taping that were edited to mislead people, like the papers or in Mr. Hartwell's extortion attempt to make it seem like there was a criminal activity being done?
I know of the one instance that I discussed. I don't know about many times being done.
Okay, but that one specific instance, yes. They edited it down for that?
Yes.
Follow up on Mr. Hatchett and Mr. Shoemaker's comments, the money for the GO, you said substantial amounts of money were used for this operation, that you could get typewriters when auditing couldn't even get paper. Is that true?
For typewriters?
Yeah, or for other equipment. You said substantial money came in the guardian's officer. They spent a lot of money for anything from tickets to the equipment that was used to tape Mr. Hartwell.
Oh, yeah, I suppose typewriters also, but I mostly was referring to like airfares and paying the rent of Russ Andrews and Tanya Burden's building, and even giving him a certain amount of money so that he could survive.
Where did the money come from?
It was sent in from the organization. In other words, a certain amount of the money would go into the guardian's office.
So you got, what organization are you talking about?
Well, in other words, people would come in the front door and they would pay for their auditing and training within the actual organization. And then a certain amount of that money was sent each week over to the guardian's office. There was separate accounts and that type of thing. They had like three or four different accounts.
Oh, so the money that came in from, say, auditing, then directly went or was part of the money that the guardian's office used?
Yes.
And that money then may have been used to bug Mr. Hartwell or set up Mr. Flynn in Operation Oscar?
Yes, that's where all the money came from, was with the money that people either paid for auditing, training, or books. It didn't come from outside sources. It always came from auditing,
these,
training.
These money sources, did you know at the time when you were in the guardian's office that they were listed as donations?
Yes.
Did you know that these were tax-exempt donations for a tax-exempt organization?
Yes.
Was it common knowledge throughout the organization that this money was being used for these purposes?
Oh, no.
In the GO office?
In the guardian's office, yes. In the regular organization, no. Most staff members have no idea. There's a booklet written by Mr. Hubbard called What Your Fees Buy, and it tells you about how you have to run the organization with the money, and it's used to help pay attorney's fees against the attacks by the government, that type of thing, but it doesn't say anything about what your fees really do by.
And you heard, where did you first hear the Hartwells? Did you hear the Hartwells testimony, other testimony that was given to this body when they gave it?
Yes.
Okay. Who was your AGPRO during the time that you served there, or the Assistant Guardian Office Public Relations Officer?
Who was my what?
AGPRO.
The Assistant Guardian Public Relations
Officer, right.
Carol Garrity.
Carol Garrity?
Yeah, although some people came in from the United States Guardian's Office to help handle the problem at various times.
Who was your AGI during that time, your Assistant Guardian of Intelligence?
Well, there was three. It started out Bruce Hamilton in the beginning, and then Bruce Hamilton was taken out of the area because he didn't handle the problem. And a girl was sent in from the United States Guardian's Office by the name of Julie Bergman. And then a guy by the name of Dan Salins then took over.
Okay, and because of policy, well-entrenched policy, you're saying that these people had to have known as to what were happening, if it was happening during their time, what was happening to people like the Hartwells, or the fair game policy being put into effect?
Are you asking, did other Scientologists know about it?
No. Did these people that were in charge know about it?
Of course they knew about it. They ordered it.
Okay. And I see a pattern shaping up with the GO, and it goes back to the training routine of how to lie to someone. Even though you set up and ran the schools, the Jarrah Society, etc., you're actually told that they were not, in, that you were not involved, basically, that you would help, etc., but you were told directly to say, no, we do not run them up, we do not set them up, etc.
That's correct.
And when you worked on these programs, Scientology covert programs, you were told that you were doing it on your own, and you were not part of the organization, it was your own time, is that correct?
Yes.
And so basically here that policy of lying to government officials or lying, this is an example of it being carried out.
Yes.
Would this policy be deviated from at all in Scientology?
No. As a matter of fact, that I mentioned about a John Cooper, who was an agent on Mr. Walters in the Hartwell. He, when his cover was blown after myself and Carol Garrity left Scientology,
mm-hmm.
he signed an affidavit, which I later saw, that said that he was acting pretty much on his own. In other words, he volunteered that he was doing it.
But you knew firsthand that that was not the case, that he was part of a program financed by Scientology.
That's true. He later, also, after his cover was blown, his freeloader debt was canceled. He owed a great deal of money. He had left the ship and had a humongous freeloader debt, and because of his dedicated service and spying services, his freeloader debt was canceled.
And so getting back to Mr. Burfield's position on policy, you know, your policies always have a reward and a punishment in corporate structures.
Yes.
And if you followed policy, or was a policy always followed from the source, or did the source always write policy, L. Ron Hubbard?
Yes.
And was what the source said followed throughout the world, in every organization?
Yes.
There was policy was followed.
Yes. Now, there were some policies that were written by other people, but Mr. Hubbard's policies always took top priority. In other words, if there was conflicting information in two policies, you would always follow Mr. Hubbard's. His was the senior on the area.
And did you ever see a policy ever not rigidly adhered to?
Yes.
You did? And what was the punishment for that? Was there a punishment for not following policy?
Yes, you were either sent to cramming or ethics.
And was it a severe punishment for Scientologists?
It would depend on the severity of the problem.
So if you did not follow policy as a corporate structure throughout the entire Scientology organization, there was a specific punishment, and if you did follow policy, such as following out a program in Operation Oscar to get Mr. Flynn disbarred, you were given an award or reward.
Yes.
And that was a pretty well-structured policy in itself, reward and punishment.
Yes, in fact, that's in some of the ethics policies. It talks about rewards and punishments and rewarding what they call upstats, which is up statistics, people who have followed policy. It's in the ethics policy.
Is a fair game considered one of the punishments for our policy people?
Yes.
And you said that you questioned some of the policies or some of the things you were doing, but you decide not to change it. Or you couldn't change it. Why is that? Was it so rigid, or why?
Well, it was rigid, and it was what Ron wanted. You have to understand that the people in Scientology do what Ron wants. And if they think that Ron wants whatever it is they're doing, whether they personally disagree with it or not, they'll do it anyway. The ones that don't leave, or they get kicked out.
If they don't leave and they're not fair game at the time, then people do not do things on a lark. They do it as a result of a specific policy and a specific program laid out in Scientology, and this is the way it goes no matter where you are in the country.
That's correct.
And finally, in the area of these schools and front groups, would you say front groups is an apropos description of them?
Yes.
The Jarrah Society, we have a very elderly population in Pinellas County. Is the Jarrah Society active here in Pinellas County?
I really don't know.
Did you ever see the Jarrah Society in Pinellas County?
No.
Okay, that's all I have.
At the peak of your career and your earning power, through all these studies, you were making $26 a week. drugs?
On a good week.
That would have been a real good week.
Yet, you testified that you paid $40,000 in Scientology while you were working, Richard.
Between my husband and myself, yes.
I just wonder how you could make at the peak of your career $26,000. You'd have $26 a week. You'd have $40,000 to spend. Is that something you accumulated prior to becoming a Scientologist?
Well, my husband and I had been married for several years before we got into Scientology, and we had some money, and we had a house that we refinanced.
So then you refinanced your house and things like that for $40,000 to get this money?
Yes.
To take more courses?
Yes.
How long were you in the Guardian's office?
As a staff member, almost a year, and then almost a year also just as a worker.
As I understand, as a member of the Guardian office, you learned to lie and to give misinformation. How do we know you're telling the truth now? And do you think any of the witnesses that have testified could possibly be dead agents?
Well, first of all, that as far as how you know whether I lie or not, I guess you just have to take my word for it. I mean, I would hardly, though realistically, fly all the way down here when I'm afraid to fly and sit in front of a bunch of people then, you know, in front of television and admit to all the things that I was involved in that I'm certainly not proud of. As far as the other people being dead agents, I don't know exactly what you mean.
Well, I understand. I may be using the term wrong, but dead agenting to me meant that we may be set up, that someone may have come forward to testify and to put Scientology in a negative light when actually they may be setting us up to be outrageous, which then can be verified that they were not telling the truth to make Scientology look good.
Oh, I see what you mean. I don't know. The people from Las Vegas that I personally know, I realize that I know they're on the square.
As far as you know, that this is not the same.
Yes.
You mentioned that a public official's background could be checked. How will you check the background of any public official on this front table?
Well, there was two ways of doing it. The first one was called overt data collection, where you would go to, the public library and look at newspaper clippings and the voter's registration. You'd check to see if they had any kind of an arrest record. You'd check around to find out if they were connected in any way to a mental health organization, that type of thing. There was also, it was called covert data collection. I really don't know how you would do that. I was not allowed to know that.
If you had something on me, how would you disperse that to the people to embarrass me?
Well,
to the press or to the people at large?
The Information Bureau would collect the information in one of the two ways I mentioned, who would then send it over to the public relations. And it would just depend on what the problem was, how it was handled. I mean, perhaps if the PR person was confronting you and they knew that you had a mistress or something, they might just in passing mention something about people that had mistresses or something. That would be one way.
Okay. Just one more, that you did all these things well, and you went along with all this mistreating of people to get Scientology, or to get more into it, because of the, I shouldn't say the faith, but the belief in the organization. Is that correct?
Yeah.
One other thing, what about coded telex with reference to Betty Orsini, who I believe was with the St. Petersburg Times, or still is the Times, and did a story originally exposing Church of Scientology. But I see here, you're sending and reviewed coded telexes about Betty Orsini. Can you tell me anything about that?
Yes, there was a time period when I was receiving and sending all the telexes, and at one point we received a telex from the Fort Harrison Guardian's office, and it was coded, and I then decoded it. And I can't remember the exact terminology of it, but it was something to the effect that Betty Orsini was in town, and No, wait a minute. It said that she was coming to town and what time she would be arriving and that she needed to be kept an eye on. I gave this information to Alan Hubbard, who I had already mentioned, and Julie Bergman, who I also mentioned, who are from the United States Guardian's office. And I asked them who Betty Orsini was, and they told me that she was one of the biggest FPs in the planet, and that they were going to have to find somebody really trustworthy to follow her and that type of thing, see what she was up to. They were afraid that she was going to get in contact with the Hubbards, or with the Hartwells and Mr. Walters and that type of thing. They were very concerned about that.
That was it. Okay, that's it, unless you have something you must add, Ms. Garvey.
Just one. Do you have any knowledge of whether Broderick and Cooper or Cooper were ever trained in Clearwater?
John Cooper's in Clearwater right now. I saw him last night. Mm-hmm.
That must have made you feel good.
Yeah, well, kind of the amusing part about it was that I was with Mr. Walters at the time. Mr. Walters and I were taking a walk, and we saw him. He came out and said hi.
Were any other of the high upper-ups in the Guardian office in your area have any training here in Clearwater that you would know or spend any time here?
Well, a man right now by the name of Bob Anderson, who is the assistant guardian in Las Vegas, he came originally from the guardian's office here. He held a position here. I'm not sure if he was the assistant guardian here or not, but he was in the guardian's office. He was sent to Las Vegas to take care of the problems.
All right. So I guess in conclusion, you might be saying that the Scientologists have been trying to dupe the press and the people for quite a long while.
Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate your coming, my colleagues do, and you've shed a lot of light on the issues, especially from coming from the Guardian's office and how it relates to the Hartwells and to other people that we have listened to. So thank you.
Mayor, at this time, I would point out for the record that some of the documents pertaining to covert data collection have been marked as exhibits 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, and specifically the document on lying, TRL, has been marked as exhibit 13. I will have testimony at a later point on an individual who was in B1 who did covert data collection through such things as breaking and entering. At this point in time, I would like to introduce an affidavit of Carol Garish, to whom the witness has just referred, and I will read that affidavit into the record.
Please do.
I, Carol Garrity, being first duly sworn to pose and say, I was a member of the Church of Scientology from April 1975 through July 1980, and during that time I became a staff member and worked full-time for the Scientology organization from August 1976 through July 1980. Between November 1978 and July 1980, I was a member of the Guardian's Office of the Church of Scientology. The Guardian's Office, more commonly referred to as the GO by Scientologists, is responsible for intelligence gathering, covert operations and activities, spying, and public relations. The Guardian's Office administers front groups such as schools and drug programs which are designed to make money. The Guardian's Office headquarters in the United States is in California. However, the Guardian's Office has the power to go into a local Scientology church and literally take over any section of it or the entire local church if necessary. This is covered in the policy letter written by L. Ron Hubbard entitled The Guardian. The Guardian's Office activities are conducted pursuant to a Scientology policy entitled the Fair Game Doctrine, which states, fair game may be deprived of property or injured by any means by any Scientologist, may be tricked, sued, or lied to, or destroyed. I have personal knowledge that the Scientology organization has actively and covertly conducted operations against attorney Michael Flynn in an attempt to destroy him and thereby eliminate him as a representative of those individuals victimized by the Scientology organization. One such operation occurred between January and July 1980 when the Guardian's Office conducted a series of covert operations to infiltrate the law office of Michael J. Flynn by placing a plant whose code name was Oscar and whose real name was William Broderick. The Guardian's Office devised a second covert operation to stop Attorney Flynn's client, Lavenda Van Schaik, from speaking out against the Scientology organization. The program was codenamed Shake and Bake. In pursuance of the program, GL agents were sent to Massachusetts to interrogate Ms. Van Schaick and tried to encourage her to divorce her husband and fire Attorney Flynn. The Guardian's office perused Ms. Van Schaick's auditing files, which contained the most personal and intimate details of her life, and extracted confidential disclosures for the purpose of blackmail and extortion. Practice of reviewing confidential auditing files and extracting private and intimate details of an individual's life is a common Scientology practice. The data gleaned from an unsuspecting individual's files is transmitted to the California headquarters for extortion and blackmail. This practice occurs regularly. I have personal knowledge of auditing information being sent to Clearwater and transmitted from Clearwater for this purpose. On one occasion, I received the Guardian's office order instructing me to remove confidential information from Tanya Burden's file, a woman suing the Church of Scientology, and release it to the media. I executed the order and brought the information to the Las Vegas Review-Journal. I became upset and in fear when I learned that 11 top leaders of Scientology had been convicted of felonies, including Mary Sue Hubbard, the founder's wife. I did not agree with the Scientology practice, which condoned burglaries, electronic surveillance, spying on former members and others perceived to be critics of Scientology, and all the other unlawful and underhanded conduct that the release of the documents in the FBI raid revealed in the national media. I left the Church of Scientology on July 18, 1980, dated this 28th day of April, 1982, Carol Garrity. This will be marked as the next exhibit.
For information, do you want to break or do you want to continue on until at this point?
Perhaps if we could take a shorter break than our usual break, an hour instead of 2 hours.
We normally come back at 2. Commissioners and staff would like to come back at 1.
No, we missed it.
All right. Is that all right with Vision Cable?